has not woven the web of life. We are but a thread in it. Whatever we do to the web, we do to ourselves. And that's a quote from Chief Seattle. Welcome to Animal Voices, the weekly program presented through the cooperative efforts of the Vancouver Humane Society, Earth Save Canada, and Animal Defense and Anti-Vivisection Society. The purpose of this program is to make people more aware of other species and cause them to respect and appreciate all animals. My name is Marge Adams. In the studio with me are co-host Carl Loskin and technician Alan Jensen. On the show today, I will be speaking with Peter Fricker of the Vancouver Humane Society. Our topic will be exotic animals in our community. And Carl, could you tell us something about what your topic is today?
Yes, Marge, and I'll be speaking with Sheila MacDonald. She is the program director for the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies. It's an umbrella organization of humane societies. They're based in Ottawa, and we'll be talking about the outdated animal cruelty bill.
Well, there's a lot to talk about on that. I believe there's been an attempt to get it updated for about 3 years. And it has not been successful yet, has it?
It has not been successful, and the Canadian Federation, what you'll be hearing today is that they are not all that excited about this watered-down bill, which would be meaningful, and feel that this is going to be passing within the next few weeks. And we'll be hearing from Sheila, because they say, we don't want it to go through.
Oh, isn't that terrible? All this work that's gone into it, and now it's so watered down, it's not even going to be helpful, I suppose.
And that at 1:30 the hour today. Mm-hmm. And Animal Voices. Well, you know, Marge, I do have an announcement, because I heard on the previous show there was the peace rally happening this weekend, but also at the Vancouver Art Gallery there'll be a gathering at 11:45 a.m. at Robson, the Vancouver Art Gallery at Robson. That's on tomorrow, Saturday, and there'll be a big rally, and it'll be to protest the seal hunt, the seal slaughter. It's not a hunt, it's a seal slaughter. And then there will also be an exhibition of paintings today, Friday, and tomorrow, all day, outside on the steps of the art gallery. So go and visit there if you have a chance, and protest the seal slaughter tomorrow at 11:45 for a great demonstration.
Thank you for those announcements, Carl. Now we have Peter Fricker on the telephone, and Peter is the Projects and Communications Director for the Vancouver Humane Society. Welcome to Animal Voices, Peter.
Hi, Marge.
Nice to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
The exotic animal issue has been a major concern for the Vancouver Humane Society for a number of years, and I know a lot of work has gone into that. Perhaps you could start by telling us what the reasons are for the Society's concern regarding exotic animals.
Well, we know that there's a big global wildlife trade, and that a lot of exotic animals are imported into North America and into Canada in particular. And there's also a large exotic pet industry within Canada which breeds exotic animals and sells them over the internet in classified advertising and through exotic animal clubs, that kind of thing. And we also know from science that wild and exotic animals suffer in captivity. They show various signs, such as it's termed stereotypic behavior, for example, bobbing their head or moving in some repetitive way or biting bars continually, that kind of thing.
Pacing back and forth. I've seen that with exotic animals. It's so sad.
Yes, and it indicates that they are very frustrated, they're bored, they're understimulated, and the suffering of all those animals, and we're talking about everything from large animals in zoos to pet reptiles in people's homes. If they're kept in cages and tanks and confined in that way, we're certain they're suffering.
Yeah, I'm sure. It's pretty obvious, isn't it, when you go to a zoo and see the animals. Now, it's not just the cruelty issue. That's a very big one for the individual animals, but it also has implications for species, doesn't it?
Yes. I mean, there are endangered species that have been traded illegally. There are people out there in Southeast Asia and African countries looking for these exotic animals to meet a very big demand in North America, Europe, and Japan in particular. And if this continues, we're going to see more of those populations just disappear.
Right. What about the issue of danger to the public? I'm sure Vancouver Humane Society is concerned about that as well, isn't it?
Absolutely. There are a number of other issues aside from animal welfare, and certainly public safety is one of those. We saw the incident last year in which a woman was killed by a pet tiger kept in captivity near 100 Mile House. But a lot of these animals that are kept can be poisonous, they can scratch and bite, and can be a danger to the public and to their owners in particular. In addition to that, there's also a threat to human health, because a lot of these animals can carry diseases, in particular pet reptiles. Most of them carry salmonella, and that's a danger to young children and the public at large.
Right. I read something about that just in the last couple of days, and I was introduced to a new word, zoonotic diseases.
That's right. That refers to diseases that can be passed from animals to humans. And zoonotic diseases have been increasing around the world over the last few decades.
Oh, yes. Diseases that we've never met with before.
Exactly.
Very difficult to treat.
And part of that is due to the globalization of that wildlife trade. There are more animals moving around to more places and more people coming into contact with animals that hasn't happened before and is happening now on a widespread scale.
Now, you mentioned breeding a bit earlier, but is there any advantage to the wild animals to having animals bred in captivity?
Well, those who breed exotic animals here in North America will often claim that by breeding them here, they're helping prevent animals from being taken from the wild. There's no real evidence of that, and there's also no way of telling when you purchase an animal, when people purchase these animals, whether they're captive bred or wild caught. And in any case, what the captive breeding programs and sales really do is just popularize and make them socially acceptable, the trade and the purchase of those kinds of animals. So in fact, it just increases the demand for wild caught animals. We also know that these breeders have to acquire new stock, and that can only come from the wild.
Yeah, I really question if it's any easier on the animal being bred in captivity, even if it's two or three generations down the line.
Absolutely. That makes no difference. A wild-caught and a captive-bred animal, in terms of behavioral needs, biological needs, and instincts are exactly the same. It takes literally hundreds or even thousands of years for an animal to become domesticated, such as, say, cats and dogs.
Right, yeah. Now, what changes would the Vancouver Humane Society like to have come about regarding exotic animals?
Well, what we really need are laws and regulations that would prohibit the keeping and sale of these animals. What we have at the moment across Canada and here in BC is a patchwork of municipal bylaws which vary in terms of the animals they put on their banned lists. They vary in whether they ban the sale and ownership or ownership. And a lot of municipalities have no bylaws, so you have this incomplete patchwork across the province. Which is really very ineffective, because where a bylaw might ban these animals in one place, they can simply go to another municipality where there is no bylaw, make their purchases there, and then bring those animals home. the other problem that's emerged is sales of exotic animals over the internet. So even if you can't buy the animal in a pet shop because there's a ban there, a bylaw there, you can simply order them over the internet, and they will literally, you know, ship these animals to you.
And that would be perfectly acceptable, even in a municipality where they were not allowed to be sold.
That's right.
Now, what about the federal government? Does it have some regulations?
There's nothing in terms of the keeping of these animals. At the federal level, there are international agreements concerning the import of endangered species, and some of those animals are therefore kept out of the country, although there is an illegal trade, and in our view, it's not particularly well enforced. They just don't have enough officers at the ports and airports to ensure that everyone is checked and every ship is checked to ensure that there's no illegal importation going on. So that's all there is at the federal level. What we would need in BC is provincial legislation to solve that problem of the municipal patchwork. If we had comprehensive provincial legislation here in BC that prohibited the sale and keeping of exotic animals, that would make a big difference.
The government has made some statements in that direction, hasn't it?
That's right. We're waiting to hear what the government is going to do. When that tiger incident happened last year, they did promise publicly to introduce some legislation dealing with exotic animals. What they suggested they might be doing is introduce a permit system which would allow only professional facilities with high standards to keep exotic animals. Mm-hmm. But we're still waiting to hear when they're going to introduce that legislation. Nothing has happened this year so far.
Now, I suppose there are lobbying groups that would be opposed to such legislation, huh?
Yes, there is opposition to all the kinds of positions we hold on this issue, mainly from the pet industry. Obviously, there is money to be made from selling these animals, and the industry does try and prevent or oppose any bylaws that are suggested and oppose legislation that would be comprehensive. There's also opposition from private individuals who own these animals, and also hobby clubs, in particular concerning reptiles. A lot of these people claim that that they are experts, that they can provide the right habitat for these animals. In our view, it's impossible to duplicate the animal's natural environment, and we just think that they're going to suffer if they're kept in captivity, even by people who have acquired considerable knowledge.
Yes, I'm sure you're right. And I always think about Rainforest Reptile Refuge and the people who ran that shelter for discarded reptiles mainly, and their belief was that you could never, even though they tried, I think, harder than anybody to replicate the natural environment, but it was totally impossible.
That's right, and that's why they received so many sick and abandoned animals, because people buy the animals, are unable to care for them. You know, they grow larger than they expected, or their care needs are so complex and they become expensive and so on, that they just dump them at the refuge, and they do the best they can to provide humane care. But that's really the evidence that shows that people really aren't equipped to deal with these exotic animals.
Yeah, could you tell us a little bit about the local legislation in the municipalities in Vancouver and around?
Yes, last year in Vancouver, the council passed an exotic animal bylaw, which prohibits the ownership of a fairly long list of exotic animals and another list banned from sale. We'd like to see these lists expanded, but they do ban, you know, the large cats such as lions and tigers, primates, some of the large snakes, venomous snakes, and so on. We'd like to see that extended to some more reptile species, but it is what we think is a good step forward. In addition to that, the council recently passed an exotic animal performance bylaw, which will prevent any kind of you know, Las Vegas style animal acts, magicians using exotic animals in their shows, that kind of thing.
Well, that's a step in the right direction, isn't it?
Yes, and that complements an existing circus bylaw. So Vancouver now has caught up to other cities in Canada and has some fairly comprehensive protection for exotic animals.
Yeah. Now, you mentioned the one myth about breeding animals and that relieving pressure on the relieves pressure on the wild animals. Mm-hmm. I believe you have another myth or two, don't you, Peter, regarding the exotics?
Well, certainly people think that they can be, cared for in facsimiles of their habitat, and that's, we've discovered through scientific research that that's just not the case. There are people who think that keeping animals in captivity is very educational and that it's important for children to see these animals up close. We always give the example of the dinosaur. We know that children are fascinated by dinosaurs and study them and learn all the facts about them, and yet no one has ever seen a dinosaur. So we think it's possible to learn about wildlife through other means, the internet, videos, books, and so on, without having to see them up close.
It certainly is true today, isn't it? More true than it ever was.
Exactly.
But in any case, you'd never see a normally behaving animal in captivity, would you? No more than you would see a person living normally in a jail cell.
Exactly. When you see something like a tiger in an enclosure, you're really seeing a facsimile of the animal because it's not going to demonstrate the way it really lives in its natural habitat.
Yeah. Now, Alan has a question for you, Peter.
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hi. When I think of exotic animals in the city, large numbers of them, the first thing I think of is the Vancouver Aquarium, which is full of nothing but exotic animals. And, of course, we have the zoo up in Fraser Valley as well, which is also a collection of exotic animals. What is your organization's position on the aquarium and such things?
We oppose all use of captive animals in entertainment, and we've made that clear to the aquarium. The aquarium is sometimes a difficult case because they do some good research. They have a lot of support from the establishment in Vancouver. They're a very hard target in that sense. But we certainly oppose the use of marine mammals as entertainment for the public.
Now, what about the Greater Vancouver Zoo?
Well, they're sort of one of the worst cases, and we've concentrated on them over a number of years. Going back to Tina the elephant, who they kept in a small enclosure for 30 years with very little stimulation, and she certainly exhibited that stereotypic behavior I mentioned, where she stood for hours just bobbing her head in frustration. And of course, more recently, they kept Hazina, a baby hippo, for 19 months in a small concrete barn. And because of the lack of regulation and the lack of enforceable standards, the zoo basically got away with that.
Well, now Tina was shipped down to a sanctuary eventually, wasn't she?
Yeah, but it did take a huge amount of public pressure to force the zoo's hand in that case.
Mm-hmm.
If there hadn't been so much pressure, they would have sold Tina to another zoo in Ontario, and we were fortunately able to prevent that.
But she died, didn't she, soon after, a few months later?
That's true, and it's been very clear, it was made very clear by the people at the sanctuary that her death was directly related to her treatment for those 30 years.
Ah, yes. And what about Hazina? What has been the outcome of Hazina? Can you tell us?
Well, there's been some good news in that the zoo, again under great pressure, was forced to finally build a long-promised new hippo facility with a proper pool and a fair amount of space and a heated barn and so on. And that's where Hazina is now. She also has company, as they did purchase another hippo from, I think it was an American zoo. So she does have some company, and her circumstances are much better. But it is just so unfortunate that these animals are there in the first place. It's
totally unnecessary, isn't
totally
it?
Totally unnecessary.
Yeah. No. Now, are there any other points that you want to bring up regarding the exotic issue, Peter?
Well, I think that people should be aware that you know, we are waiting for the BC government to do something on this exotic legislation that's been promised. Mm-hmm. And we really think that people who care about animals should be, you know, making their views known, and you know, we hope that the government will listen and get this legislation in place.
Mm-hmm, right. Regarding the aquarium, now that very recently was able to extend its footprint considerably. That will probably lead to additional animals there, won't it?
It's possible, and we'll certainly keep our eye on that. One of the things we'd be concerned about is that, in addition to the marine mammals and aquatic wildlife they have, we noticed that they've acquired caimans, which are a crocodile-type species, and that's really a signal for a bad trend if they continue with that kind of acquisition.
Now, if people want to learn more about the exotic issue, could you give us websites that they could go to?
Yes, they can go on our website and for some information, and that's www.vancouverhumanesociety, as all one word, .bc.ca. And there's also a lot of information on ZooCheck's website, which is www.zoocheck.com.
Mm-hmm, good, thank you. Now, final question, a very important one. What can our listeners do to help the exotic animals?
Well, one thing they can do is certainly don't purchase any exotic animals, even small reptiles, and encourage their friends and family to do the same. There is literature available from VHS and ZooCheck and other organizations, which we'd be happy to send people, which educates people on the problems with the exotic issue and would be useful to distribute. And they can make their views known to government at all levels about, concerning the issue.
Right. Now, if people want to get literature from the Vancouver Humane Society, they could call you up, I suppose, on your telephone number?
Yeah, it's 604-266-9744.
Good. Well, thank you so much for being with us today, Peter. You've given out a lot of very worthwhile information.
Thank you, Marge.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
You have been listening to an interview with Peter Fricker, who's the Projects and Communications Director for the Vancouver Humane Society. Now, Alan, could we have a little bit of music?
I just happen to have a piece queued up by Dana Lyons called We Don't Want to Live in a Zoo.
Recording tonight is Bob Conger, a sound man for a sound job.
Well, one day we all went to the zoo, saw the lion and the kangaroo. One little monkey turned her bum and did a rude thing with her little pink thumb. She said, we don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. And I wouldn't leave her.
We went and saw the sad old lion sitting in a cell all day and crying. He's not allowed to run and play, just sits there waiting for the judgment day.
We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. I would either with you.
The peacocks danced so fine and proud, they soon attracted quite a crowd. They turned their backs to the people there, and all you could see was bums all bare. They said, we don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. I wouldn't either, would you?
We went and played for the elephants. They went into their jungle dance. They raised their trunks and squirted air. They said, please, won't you take us away from here?
We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. We don't want to live in the zoo. I would either with you.
The big giraffe was looking right down, wearing his great big gruffy old frown. I guess he's sad because he can see all his jungle friends in their misery, singing,
we don't want you to live in the zoo. We don't want you.
You are listening to CFRO 102.7 on your FM dial, and this is Animal Voices Radio Show. My colleague Carl Loskin has
yes.
the news.
Yes, and you know, tonight, Friday, there's be an opportunity to meet the renowned scientist, Dr. David Levine, for a presentation on seal conservation at the Heritage Courtroom of the Vancouver Art Gallery, 750 Hornby Street. All are welcome, and light vegetarian fare and refreshments will be served. Well, once again, this weekend, today, outside the steps, the art gallery, there'll be exhibition of art about this seal slaughter, and because that's coming up pretty soon as well, and there will be a march tomorrow, Saturday, starting at 11:45. People would like to be there. Well, you know, we're not the only ones protesting, and Paul McCartney, he's jumped on the bandwagon this time to rescue kangaroos. Some 500 of them are going to be shot with darts and with a lethal injection at a military base in Australia. And the Vancouver Sun wrote, there is an urgent need for action to protect kangaroos from a barbaric industry which slaughters them for meat and leather. And those were the words of Paul McCartney in an undated message. So the animals, Paul McCartney is putting his name behind stopping the senseless slaughter of the kangaroos, and of course he's well known for also opposing vehemently the seal slaughter on our shores. Here come the barbarians, I always say, and they might be Canadians slaughtering the animals. Well, Sheila MacDonald is the program director for the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies. Welcome to Animal Voices, Sheila. So we're not quite there yet, so let's get on with the Sea Shepherd Association. And they are also being instrumental going down into Antarctica and opposing the Japanese whalers. And Paul Watson sent me a note. He says, Dear Carl, as the whaling season draws to a close, so does our whale defense campaign, Operation Migaloo. After numerous confrontations with the Japanese whalers over the course of many weeks, we were able to keep the spotlight on Japan's illegal whaling program and in so doing saved nearly 500 whales from their deadly harpoons. As our ship returns to Melbourne, we are satisfied knowing we have saved so many lives and feel remorse for the ones we couldn't. Now we prepare for our seal defense campaign and hope that our efforts for the whales have not been in vain. Mm-hmm. So that's Paul Watson.
Yes,
and,
he said an extremely...
He's now turning his attention to the Canadians ready to slaughter the seals on the ice.
He's certainly a very brave man.
Well, we have Sheila MacDonald. She's the program director for the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies. This is an umbrella organization for many other humane societies. Welcome to Animal Voices, Sheila.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
Well, some wonderful you work on a wide scope of issues here and advise so many organizations. So now for many years, the many organizations like the animal voices here and Earth Save Canada have protested, and CETFA have been protesting the that we would like to have the legislation passed to the animal cruelty bill. But now you have this. You sent me a note saying that this bill is about to be passed, and that this has been watered down, and you've taken a different stance on whether or not this bill should be passed, Bill S-203.
Yes, that's correct. I wouldn't even go so far as to say that Bill S-203 is watered down, because it doesn't at all resemble the bill that we were trying to get passed, that the Liberal government had introduced about 7 times continually. It kept dying when Parliament prorogued for an election or various other things. So the Liberal government did continue to bring back a bill that would make the necessary changes to our animal cruelty laws, which we have today written in 1892 and very badly need to be amended. They're not working at all. So what Bill S-203 does is it took actually the sentencing provisions from that good bill, and those were good sentencing provisions. So today we have very, very weak sentences of no more than $2,000 and 6 months in jail and a 2-year prohibition on animal ownership. Of course, nobody gets maximum fines, so it's rare to see a fine currently of even $1,000. So this would increase the penalties substantially, and that is a good thing. That's the only good thing I can say about Bill S-203. And the reason that we're opposing it, even though we do support increased penalties, is because there are so many problems and loopholes in the current law that need to be changed. And we fear that especially after 8 years of debate, that if this bill is passed, then parliamentarians will sort of clap their hands and think, okay, well, we've done a good thing. We've fixed the animal cruelty bill or legislation, when in fact they have not.
So, Sheila, I wonder if you could mention some of the loopholes that exist at this time with this new legislation.
Sure. One of the biggest problems is with regard to crimes of neglect. And currently the wording says willful neglect, and that requires proof that a person actually intended to neglect their animals, which is a bit of an oxymoron. So I've read the court proceedings from a couple of cases where dozens of animals have been starved to death, you know, something that takes obviously a fairly long period of time. It's not as if someone forgot to feed them for a couple of days. These are very serious offenses, and I've read that the judge's proceedings, and the judge will conclude at the end, well, he's not convinced that the person actually intended for the animals to die, and so there is so they get off scot-free. So that is what happens most of the time. Either a prosecutor will not want to proceed with a case to court because they know it's not likely to succeed, or if they do try, they're very rarely successful. And crimes of neglect are the most common animal abuse crimes that we see. Now, I always think it's important to point out that, you know, when we're talking about a criminal code offense, it's got to be something serious. It's not, you know, just, well, gee, I think, you know, the neighbor didn't give his dog some water yesterday or didn't feed the dog even for, you know, a couple days. I mean, there has to be serious neglect where animals are in distress. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Now, you mentioned that it took 8 years for this legislation to reach where it is now. Why did it take so long?
Yeah, when it was first proposed in 1999 by the Justice Minister, then it was Anne McClellan, it was very contentious, and most of the animal protection groups supported it. There were some that wanted more. We supported it from the beginning. And then there were animal industry groups like farmers, researchers, hunters, trappers, those folks that, you know, that use animals either for their livelihoods or as recreation, that were concerned that because there were changes being made that maybe they would lose some of their legal protections. Currently, our law protects lawful activities, and so, you know, we and the Justice Department continued to tell those groups that no, there is nothing to fear. All of the legal protections still exist. Anyway, in 2003, the bill went to the Senate, and the Senate proposed a few changes. The House then accepted some of those changes, but wouldn't accept some others. And when the House accepted some of those key amendments, they're kind of complicated, so unless you want all the details, I'll spare you that. But with that decision from the House, that was the very first time in 2003 when pretty much everybody was on board. We understood there was a list of 75 animal use organizations that supported the bill. The Liberal Rural Caucus then came on side, and they were the biggest problem. Even though the bill was being proposed by the Liberal government, the Rural Caucus was uneasy about it, and they were still opposing it. But with those small changes that were made, those groups then came on side. And in fact, they formed a coalition, and when that bill died again in 2003 because the Senate wouldn't let it pass, which was incredibly undemocratic, that finally we have the support of the vast majority of Canadians and pretty much all the stakeholders on both sides of the issue, and the Senate stood in its way.
Now this amazing statistic from your webpage that says some 85% of Canadians support legislation that would increase the likelihood of conviction on animal abuse.
Absolutely. We did an independent national opinion poll a year and a half ago that gave us those results. So, you know, we are 100% sure when we say that the vast majority of Canadians support good legislation. And in fact, 130,000 Canadians have signed petitions specifically opposing Bill S-203. So here we stand today with a bill that is completely inadequate. I suggest that even increasing the penalties, the legislation will not be applied any, of course it won't be applied any better than it is today, because there are absolutely no changes to the wording of the offenses. So we argue that it is useless, and as I say, we worry that Parliament, and particularly the Conservative government, is going to say, hey, we were the good guys, we got this animal cruelty bill through. So it's a very unfortunate position to be in right now, and this bill is pretty much at the 11th hour in the House of Commons.
Now, Canadians want animal cruelty legislation that will make a difference while safeguarding heritage activities like fishing, hunting, and farming. And does this include a protection to continue leg hold traps?
Yes, it would. If those leg hold traps are approved, you know, if they meet the provincial trapping regulations, yes.
So let's maybe turn to the provincial legislation rather than the federal. And of course, you made it quite clear to me that the NDP was supporting your stand on this issue here, the animal.
Absolutely. Yes.
But it seems as if our present government wants to steamroll this through.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, but so maybe you can just draw a difference here. Maybe this needs to be done on a provincial level rather than a federal level. Is there any hope there?
Well, there's a lot of hope there, and most provinces have updated their Animal Protection Act over the last 10 years or more. For example, Alberta, where the recent case I think most people have heard of, where 29 horses died of malnutrition and another 100 were seized from the same property, you know, that's clearly a very serious offense. Now, that will be charged almost for sure under the Alberta Animal Protection Act, because it contains up to a $20,000 fine and a lifetime prohibition on animal ownership, and has their offenses are much easier to apply in a case like this. This case is actually a perfect example of the problems with the criminal code. As I mentioned before, neglect cases, these horses have, you know, very clearly been severely neglected, and they would probably fall, that kind of case would probably fall through the cracks in the criminal code, which is why it will more than likely be prosecuted under the Provincial Act. So that's a good thing in those provinces that have updated their acts. Here in Ontario, we have not updated our Ontario SPCA Act except for a couple of specific issues, actually, like puppy mills, which is a very good thing. But the problem, you know, it's fine to prosecute under provincial acts, but then if a person moves to another province, their criminal record doesn't follow them. So in serious cases, it is more appropriate to proceed with a federal criminal charge so that they would have a record that would follow them across the country. There have been cases of puppy mill operators, for example, that were charged in one province under the Provincial Act, and they just, you know, up and moved to another province, and that's not a problem.
Now, I find it unique that Alberta, which one associates as being the ranching country and
yes.
many farmers who like
good
to
point.
Go to rodeos,
yes,
has
point.
A meaningful legislation regarding animal cruelty.
Yes, that's a very interesting point, isn't it? That sort of conservative
How is British Columbia doing?
British Columbia also has a very good provincial act, and they just updated theirs to make it even better as well. One of the things, though, is that in provincial acts, they're a little bit different than the criminal code. The criminal code is the highest law of the land, and it's considered to be sort of the moral law of our society. And so that's the way it is written. It does not include reference to specific activities in any part of the criminal code. So whereas on the provincial level, those acts, even though, as I said, Alberta has a very well-worded provincial act, but that most provincial acts include a list of exemptions. And so it will say, you know, there is a duty of care to provide, you know, this is what Alberta says, provide particular care for your animals, and it specifies, you know, nutrition and water and veterinary care and other such things. So that's great, but it will exempt farmers, you know, a whole long list of activities.
First Nations, yeah.
And so that is what provides 100% reassurance to people carrying out those activities. But it's because provincial acts take a more of a regulatory approach. It's just a little bit different than the way the criminal code is.
Sheila, I'm wondering about factory farming, if there's any chance that those animals can be relieved of the immense cruelty that's practiced upon them. Is there any way that that could be legislated against?
Yeah, you raise a very good point, and I know that a lot of people are very concerned about, you know, trapping, the example that was brought up before, mm-hmm. And farming. Our position has been the criminal code is not the way to go about changing those industries. You know, obviously, if a farmer is doing something that is causing extreme animal suffering that is way beyond normal standard practices, they should be prosecuted. And that's why we so strongly oppose any kind of exemptions in the criminal code. It's just not appropriate, it's not done, and that is just a non-starter. But, so mm-hmm. it's not to say that the CFHS thinks that everything is just fine in the livestock industry or the trapping industry or some others, but we don't think that the right way to change those practices is to make them criminalized. You know, you and I and many other people might think that some of the things that go on are indeed cruel, and there's no question that there is animal suffering mm-hmm. in the pursuit of livestock raising, hunting animals can be suffering, you know, in research laboratories. There are all kinds of things in our society. Today, though, mm-hmm. in our society, those activities are considered lawful, and the criminal code says that if you are doing something according to what is standard for that particular practice, then that is not an offense. If there was another way you could be doing it that wouldn't cause the same pain and suffering, then you do have an obligation to do that. So we feel that the better way to go about changing those sorts of standards is by working through the system, and certainly public outcry, and that has public outcry has gone a long way towards changing certainly farming practices around the world, and I would suggest that that will happen faster as a result of public outcry than it will through legislation.
I see. There's no regard whatsoever in the criminal code for psychological cruelty with the animals.
I don't think that our legislators are ready for that. That's mm-hmm. I almost have to laugh saying that, since they're having trouble with what we're trying to have passed, which is absolutely not radical at all, and that's why we supported the bill that we have supported. It currently exists as a private member's bill by Mark Holland, Bill C-373. We have continued to say this is not a radical bill. It is not going to impact currently lawful activities. It just isn't. But it closes the loopholes. So, you know, it's kind of one step at a time.
Mm-hmm.
And I just don't think today's society is not ready for anything radical. You know, it just wouldn't pass through our parliament.
Right.
So that's where we are in our society today, I think.
We're speaking with Sheila McDonald from the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies. Their webpage is cfhs.ca, C-A-C-F-H-S. www.bill.ca. Maybe you can just give us a little overview of your organization, and you're based in Ottawa.
Yes, we are. We are, as our name suggests, a federation of member humane societies and SPCAs across the country. We do have some members that are not SPCAs or humane societies as part of their name, but they are their primary focus has to be animal welfare. Most of our members do sheltering of animals, but some of them are more advocacy groups, some even at the national level. So we don't have authority over our members, and that's sort of the true structure of a federation. So we exist for and because of our members, and we represent them, for example, on our work on the criminal code. And so we will, you know, we do a lot of networking and information sharing. Of course, I'm keeping, you know, all of our members and even actually non-members. We communicate with all humane societies and SPCAs about what's happening at the federal level on the criminal code. That's one of our biggest initiatives. I also do a lot of work actually with the livestock industry. So again, our role is to represent the interests of humane societies on national issues that can't really be done at the regional or provincial level.
What a wonderful organization. And Alan has a question.
Oh, hi. I was wondering about the parliamentary support for the bill. Now, obviously, the Conservatives are trying to push this much watered-down bill through, but we do have a minority government. And the question is, are the other parties going to support the bill or not? And I'm particularly wondering about Quebec and the Bloc Québécois, and if they, what you think, or if they've said what, how they're going to vote.
Yeah, that's a great question. As I said, or as Carl mentioned, there is huge, huge support from the NDP. In fact, they're trying to make a really big issue of this. The Bloc, unfortunately, has kind of stood on the fence. They have spoken very strongly in support of the bill that we support, 373, but unfortunately they have decided to kind of support both bills. However, I have heard lately that they might be reachable to change their minds and oppose S-203. Because, as I say, Bloc MPs have spoken very strongly in the House of Commons. The Liberals, unfortunately, are, I have to say, are our biggest disappointment. This is a party that brought this bill back 7 times, and they are not supporting it as a party right now, and that is extremely discouraging. I don't know whether they just haven't stayed current on it. I think some of them are being misled by various industry groups. It's unfortunate. There's a lot of paranoia, and one of the biggest problems on this whole issue has been misinformation. And, you know, these farming groups and hunting and fishing groups, they're just so paranoid of animal rights groups. And they, you know, they say, oh, well, the animal rights groups are going to use this bill and they're going to try and prosecute us. You know what? Animal rights groups do not have authority to lay charges against people. And unfortunately, we just can't get through to these folks, and so they are very worried about it and have really influenced politicians. Animal rights groups can only bring charges as a private prosecution, just like you or I can, but we have very stringent screening processes. It is not easy to bring forward a criminal charge as a private prosecution. It's very difficult.
Thank you, Sheila MacDonald, from the Canadian Federation of Humane Societies. People should look at their webpage, cfhs.ca. And thank you for being on Animal Voices, and we'll have you on again for another update.
I just want to encourage people, if you have the time and inclination, to phone your MP, especially if you have a Liberal MP in your riding, and encourage them not to support S-203. That's our big push for the next 2 or 3 weeks before the bill goes for final vote.
Thank you, Sheila.
Thank you.
And bye for now.
Bye-bye.
And you're listening to Animal Voices, coming to you on CFR Radio 102.7 FM. Many of our programs are listed on our webpage, animalvoices.org.
Yeah, thank you, Carl. Now, I have a little story, and I think we have about 4 minutes, and that's about what the story takes. It's about a squirrel, and his name is Barney. Mary Guy figured that becoming a national celebrity was probably about as much as a squirrel could hope to achieve in one lifetime. But Barney is not your average squirrel. Mary has a bottled water business in Garden City, Kansas. She is also a known animal lover. One day in August of 1994, one of her customers showed her an orphaned baby fox squirrel that he had found. When he asked if she could care for it, she felt she had to at least give it a try. It so happened that a week earlier, Mary's cat, Corky, had 4 kittens. Mary's husband, Charlie, suggested they try adding the squirrel to the litter of kittens, and it worked. Barney, named by a grandson after a particular purple dinosaur, was not only adopted by Corky, he was accepted as a sibling by all four kittens. He became especially close with one feline sister, Celeste. Some of Guy's guests thought this cat-squirrel family was so adorable that they contacted the local newspaper about it. The paper ran a story with a photo of the mother cat nursing her four kittens and Barney under the headline, "One of these kittens seems sort of squirrely." The unusual story was picked up by the Associated Press and sent to newspapers all over the country. As a result, Mary received calls and letters from all over the country, and even Canada, by people who were impressed with the story and picture. Barney was a celebrity. Unfortunately, there was a downside to Barney's fame. The article was seen by employees of the Kansas Department of Wildlife and Parks. A state official contacted the guys and told them that it is illegal to keep a squirrel as a pet in the state of Kansas, and they would have to return Barney to the wild. Mary was thunderstruck. Not only had she become attached to her unusual pet, she feared for his life if he were returned to the loose. He had no fear of cats. He'd been raised by one. But squirrels are rodents, and cats are natural enemies of rodents. If Barney was turned loose, he'd be lunch for the first stray cat he met. She explained this to the authorities, but to no avail. The law's the law. "Well, ma'am," suggested one officer, "if you buy a hunting license, you can legally keep him until the end of squirrel season. If it runs till December the 31st, what a strange arrangement. It was a temporary solution, but Mary hurried out to pay the $13 for a hunting license. Mary grieved as the end of the year approached. She had come to truly love the mischievous little guy and was certain that turning him loose was tantamount to a death sentence. Also, by this time, all the kittens had been adopted except Celeste, and she was, and Barney were now best friends. They played together, slept together, and chased each other all over the house. If Mary separated them, Celeste will wail miserably. And Barney showed not the slightest interest in life in the great outdoors. Mary again approached the newspapers. Perhaps some notoriety, which had landed Barney in this mess in the first place, would be useful. The story of Barney's plight went out over the Associated Press wires. By early December, Mary was deluged with calls and letters from all over the country offering their prayers and moral support. Some callers who lived in the States with differing laws even offered to take both Barney and Celeste. The Wildlife and Parks Department also received calls and mail from around the country. Not wanting to look heartless, they suggested that Barney might be released at the Garden City Zoo's park. The Kansas Attorney General called Mary and suggested that she give Barney to a rehabilitator who would teach him to survive in the wild before releasing him. Still, Mary feared for the safety of her beloved pet and knew he didn't want to leave his happy life any more than she wanted to lose him. As New Year's Eve approached, the guy saw one slim chance. The new year would bring a new administration into the Kansas State House. Mary arranged for friends who were invited to the new governor's inaugural celebration to take information about Barney with them. One of the first acts of the Kansas governor's office in 1995 was to issue the guys a special permit to keep their squirrel. And so Barney became the first squirrel in history to not only become a national celebrity, but to receive a pardon from the governor. No, not your average squirrel. And that story is by Greg Bassett, who's president of the Squirrel Lovers Club.
Well, that's a nice story, but we have to think of this item we had on our show earlier about exotic animals. And, I mean, the government was right. I mean, people shouldn't have pets
for
squirrels,
they don't.
Right?
They can't. Here is the same thing. You can't have wildlife.
I mean, you can have a very good excuse for having an exotic pet, but but the thing, it's, you open the door and then what?
Yeah, absolutely. You're right. Yeah. Anyway, I thought that was an interesting story.
So next week we'll be having the Canadian Cancer Association on our program with the talking about pesticides. We'll have we'll have Stacy on there. So anyway, it'll be a good Friday. And hopefully a good weekend for most people. And EarthSave is calling out to people that meat production is hard on the environment. Livestock number in the billions is hard on the planet and requires large amounts of resources in the form of land, feed, and water. The meat industry uses copious fresh water, then pollutes it with animal waste, antibiotics, and other toxins. So, of course, the rainforests are being destroyed also. And over to you, Alan.
Well, I just wanted to say that you just reminded us that next weekend is Easter weekend, and kids often get gifts for Easter. And unfortunately, rabbits are often. When you were talking about what's coming up next week, it just made me think of that. And it's good to remind people that rabbits are not a good present. You go to some of the parks in southern Vancouver and the Delta and so on, and there's rabbits all over the place, which eventually usually get eaten by eagles or coyotes or something. But it's not a good thing to do, to give rabbits for gifts.
No, it certainly isn't, because they're soon thrown out, like into Richmond. There's an abundance of rabbits running
parts
wild.
Parts of Richmond and Delta, they're just all over the place in those parks, and it's not a good place for them. That's not their natural habitat. These aren't domestic, local rabbits. They're not indigenous rabbits.
Right? No, not at all.
And my Easter egg will be made out of dark chocolate. That is totally vegan.
What a great idea.
And irresistible.
I don't know what the fascination is with eggs, you know, like, I always think they kind of smell funny. Well,
I guess we're out of time.
EcoShock is ready for your next edition.
So let me just close by saying thank you so much for listening to Animal Voices. We will be back again next week at 12 noon on CFRO 102.7 FM. Good afternoon.